sometimes you hear something that you find moving or meaningful, and sometimes you hear something that completely shifts the way that you look at the world. That you were a different person with a different outlook prior to learning this piece of information than you are afterwards. And the poem that I want to begin with today is one of those pieces. That before I heard this poem, I thought about the world differently than after I heard this poem. This is a poem by Rabbi Yitzhak Feigenbaum. Many of you may have never heard of him. He was an educator in Toronto, who I just heard recently made Aliyah, and is known in the world of education as an impactful educator, that he uses different experiential mediums to really prove a point to his students. And he wrote this poem, originally published as a Purim Torah, something that was meant to give us a little chuckle. But as we read it, you're going to see that it is much, much more powerful than a piece of Purim Torah. "'Twas the night of the Geula, and in every single shtibel, sounds of Torah could be heard coming from every kind of yidel. This one in English, some in Hebrew, some in Yiddish. Some sang pshat, and some sang chiddush. And up in Shemayim, the Eibishter decreed, the time has come for my children to be freed. Rouse the Mashiach from his heavenly breath. Give him, get in his chariot and head down to earth. The Mashiach got dressed and with a heart full of glee, went down to earth and entered the first shtibel he did see. I'm the Mashiach. Hashem has heard your plea. Your Geula has come and it is time to go free. They all stopped their learning. This was quite a surprise. And they looked at him carefully with piercing sharp eyes. He's not the Mashiach, said one with a grin. Just look at his hat and the pinches and brim. That's right, cried another with a grimace and a frown. Whoever heard of Mashiach with a brim that is down? Well, thought Mashiach, if that is the rule, I'll turn up my brim before I go to the next shul. So he walked on right over to the next shul in town, confident to be accepted since his brim was no longer down. I'm the Mashiach, he cried as he began to enter. But the Jews there wanted to know first if he was right, left, or center. Your clothes are so black, they cried out in a fright. You can't be Mashiach, you're far much to the right. If you want to be Mashiach, you must be properly outfitted. So they replaced his black hat with a kippah that was knitted. Wearing his new kippah, Mashiach went out and he said, no difference to me what I wear on my head. So he went to the next shul, for his mission was dear. But he was getting a bit frustrated with the Yidden down here. I'm the Mashiach, he cried, and they all stopped to stare. And a complete eerie stillness filled up in the air. You're the Mashiach? Just imagine that. Whoever heard of Mashiach without a black hat? But I do have a hat, the Mashiach then said. So he pulled it right down and plunked it down on his head. Then the shul started laughing and one said, where's your cup? You can't have Mashiach with a brim that is up. If you want to be Mashiach and be accepted in this town, put some pinches in your hat and turn that brim down. Mashiach walked out and said, I guess my time has not really come. I'll just have to return to where I came from. So he went to his chariot, but just as he began to enter, all sorts of Jews appeared from left, right, and center. Please wait, do not leave. It's all their fault, they said. And they pointed to each other and to what was on each other's head. Mashiach just looked sad and said, you don't understand. And then started up his chariot to get out of this land. Yes, it's very wonderful that you all learn Torah, but you seem... that you all learn Torah, but you seem to have forgotten a crucial part of our Mesorah. What does he mean? What is he talking about? They all looked bewildered and all began to shout. Mashiach looked back and answered, the first place to start is to shut up your mouths and open up your hearts. To each of you, certain Yidden seem too frum or too fry, but all Yidden are beloved in the Eibishter's eye. And on his way up, he shouted, "If you want me to come, try working a little harder on some avas chinam." Now, when you first read it, there are parts that make you chuckle. The hat down, the brim up, the brim down, these things that we've all heard. This kippah, that kippah, I couldn't possibly marry into a family where they wear knitted kippahs. And I couldn't possibly have someone as my rav if he wears a black velvet. And she covers her hair this way, and she doesn't cover her hair, and she wears pants, and she wears skirts, and she looks like this, and her kids go to that school, and their kids go to that school. And these are all things that we hear in our lives. So at first, it's a Purim Torah, and you laugh a little. And then it sets in, and you realize it's not funny at all. That we live in a world where these things, that when put in context, are so small. The material that you wear on your head, it's so inconsequential. But these are the things that we allow to divide us. We all know they shouldn't, but they do. That's how we divide between our communities. We distinguish one hashkafa from another, and we place real significance on them. And no matter how many times everyone says, we have to come together, there has to be achdus, there's something that nags at us. As many of you know, I no longer live in Chicago, unfortunately. I now live in New Jersey, and I'm the rebbetzin of a shul in central New Jersey. So occasionally, I'll step in for my husband, and I'll give the weekly lunch and learn shiur. It's a nice group of our members, and we come together to learn a little bit about the parsha. And last week, or 2 weeks ago at this point, we were learning about Parshas Vayechi, and I shared a piece of Torah from the Nesivos Shalom. I also shared it on our Tuesday morning shiur about how when Yaakov called together his children at the end of his life, the message he wanted to give over to them was one of achdus, that in order to bring about the end of days, the final salvation, we would have to come together as one cohesive unit. And one of my members, after we talked all about community and coming together and achdus, togetherness, which is our theme this morning that we are going to be exploring throughout the day, one of my members raised his hand and said, "But we're not the same. There are real differences between us. In my community, we are a modern Orthodox shul that is surrounded by over 700 Hasidish families. So we have a very unique community that's made up of very different types of people." And he said, "It's all beautiful. We can say hello to each other on the street. We can even attend each other's smachot. We can act like one community." But he said, "What do you do about the fact that we really are different? It's not just the externals. The externals mirror what we believe on the inside." So while this poem is saying it's a matter of brim up or brim down, the distinctions between a community that wears knitted kippahs and one that wears black hats is not just what's on their head. It reflects what's on the inside. So that's what I want to explore today. Is I could stand up here and I could just say, "Let's come together. You've seen the videos coming out of Eretz Yisrael of the Hasidim with their arms around the soldiers, and I, like everyone else in this room, probably watches them on repeat, because trust me, it's much better than looking at the news. It's beautiful to see people coming together. But what I want to explore this morning is, what do we do with those real differences? Do we just hold hands and sing Kumbaya and say, it's all okay, whatever anyone does is fine, it's beautiful? Or are we really meant to feel that there is something different between us? And if so, how do we navigate those feelings? So to do that, I want to begin to explore with a Gemara in Maseches Eruvin. It's in source number 2 on your source sheet. Amar of Abba Amar Shmuel. Shalosh shanim nechleku b'shamay v'beis Hillel. We are talking about one of the most famous machlokot, one of the most famous disagreements in our history, and that is the disagreement between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the house of Hillel, which was not just a house, it was an entire way of learning of Beit Hillel, and the house of Beit Shammai. Halalu omrim halacha kimotinu. On one side, Beit Hillel said, the halacha is how we believe. The halalu omrim, and the other side say, halacha kimotinu. The halacha is as we believe. Yatsa baskol v'amra ilu v'ilu divrei elokim chayim. A baskol, a divine voice, came from above and said, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Beis Hillel, his words are Dvar Hashem. Beis Shammai, his words are Dvar Hashem. The halacha ki Beis Hillel. But the halacha in this case is like Beis Hillel. V'ki me'achar sha'alu ve'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, ipnei mazachu Beis Hillel l'kvoa halacha kimotan. So we say, if the words of Beis Hillel were Divrei Elokim Chaim, and the words of Beis Shammai were Divrei Elokim Chaim, through what did Hillel merit that his words should be the halacha? Mipnei shenuchin ve'aluvin, hayu v'shonin divreihem v'divrei Beis Shammai, v'lo od ela shemakdimin divrei Beis Shammai l'divreihem. So why do we rule according to Beis Hillel? Because of the pleasant way that they presented their words. They had a certain kindness about them, a modesty, that Beis Hillel merited that we should rule like him. How do we know that Beis Hillel had such a modesty? Because whenever the halachos are written, the halacha of Beis Shammai is actually listed first. That one of the most famous examples of the dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is when it comes to Hanukkah candles. And if we remember the Gemara correctly, the Gemara tells us first that Beis Shammai says that we should start on the first night with 8 candles and count downwards. And then the Gemara tells us that Beis Hillel says that we should start with 1 candle and we should count upwards. And in any instance where we see this machlokes, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, we will see the words of Beis Shammai listed first. But the piece that I want to take out of this Gemara in Eruvin is this idea of Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. These words are correct, and these words are correct. That's not something that we as human beings really like to hear. We like to hear that there's one right way to do things. For example, on the way home on Friday, my children, I have a 5-year-old and an almost 4-year-old, and they were talking between themselves about the Parsha. And my son, my 4-year-old, who has an Israeli teacher, says that Batya pulled Moshe out of the water. Upon which my 5-year-old started screaming, absolutely not, Basya pulled Moshe out of the water. And they're going at it, yelling at each other, Batya, Basya, Batya, Basya. And mommy, and don't think we're such tzaddikim, they fight over the toys also. But they said to me, mommy, who is right? And I said, you're both right. They were like, that is not true. It's not possible that we're both right. And I think that, although I think we can all understand that there's different havara, there's different pronunciations, and we understand how there's multiple truths in Batya versus Basya. When it comes to more existential issues, or even when we read about halacha that we understand to be a roadmap to our life, that Hashem has one way that he wants us to live, it's very hard to understand this multiplicity. That there can be Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. If Hashem has one intention for us, how is it possible that this is Dvar Hashem and that this is Dvar Hashem? So the Ritva on Eruvin goes on to try to explain to us how this manifests practically. So in source number 3, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Sha'alu Rabbanei Tzarfat. So the rabbis of France explain. He'ach ashar shi'ihu shnehem divrei Elokim chayim. How is it possible that both of them could be the words of Hashem? V'zasor v'zematir. Perhaps one would say something is asur, and one would say something is mutar, that something is allowed. V'tirtzu ki kisha'ala Moshe lamarom. When Moshe went up to Shamayim to receive the Torah, l'kabel Torah hara'oilo, al kol davar v'davar, mem tet panim le'iser, v'mem tet panim le'heter. On every instance that Moshe learned about with Hashem, there were mem tet, just 49 ways of understanding that it could be not allowed and 49 ways of understanding that it could be allowed. This is what we commonly throw around the phrase, shivim panim la Torah, that there are 70 ways to see the Torah. That we say, within every issue, there's 70 ways to understand it. V'sha'allah HaKadosh Baruch Hu alzeh. But Moshe asked Hashem, and perhaps Moshe understood what we were going to be like, and he said, Hashem, this is really not going to work for the Jewish people. How are we going to know what's correct? If there's 49 ways to understand that this could be correct and 49 ways to understand that this could be incorrect, how are they ever going to know what to do? In any situation, we're going to list the this many reasons this way and this many reasons this way? Doesn't seem like it's going to work. The Amar, Shehizem Masur L'Chachmei Yisrael, Shebechol Dor Vador, V'yihya Hachra'a Kimotam, V'nachun Hu L'fi Hadrash, V'derech Ha'emes Yesh Ta'am V'sod B'davar. So Hashem said to Moshe, in every generation, the Chachamim are going to spend the time learning all of the possible permutations. And they are going to be imbued with the necessary wisdom and understanding to understand which of the possible ramifications is going to be necessary for this generation. That in this generation, we need to rule this way. And it's Dvar Hashem. Perhaps in a different generation, we needed to rule differently. And in that generation, that was Dvar Hashem. One generation was not correct while the other generation was incorrect. It's all Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim, but it's what's needed in that specific circumstance. And we all know that this works when it comes to halacha. That two individuals can ask a Rav the same exact question. Or to the one asking the question, it seems exactly the same. Is this chicken kosher? But the Rav knows that this woman, her family is really struggling financially. And this woman, they can afford to go to the store and just buy another chicken. So for this woman, he's going to say, better halachically that she should buy a new chicken. But for the woman who's struggling financially, there are heterim and there are leniencies within the halacha to say that she can use this chicken. It's not that one was eating a non-kosher chicken, and that even had the wealthier one eaten at the less wealthy woman's house, they would have been eating treif. It's that for each individual, there is room in the halacha to find what fits best for them. In Pirkei Avos, in source number 4, it gives us insight in regards to machlokas. So this all sounds all good and well when we all have attended this year and we all have an understanding that what works best for one individual might not work best for another individual. And that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were able to respect one another. But what happens when there is a disagreement? When you come to that moment of no I'm right and no I'm right. So it says in Pirkei Avos in source number 4, Kol machloka shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa l'hiskayim. Any machlokas that is in the name of heaven will last, will be able to sustain itself. V'she'eino l'shem shamayim, but one that is not l'shem shamayim, that is not with the correct intentions, ein sofa l'hiskayim, this is not a machlokas that is going to be able to be sustained. Ezohi machlokas shehi l'shem shamayim, what is considered to be an example of a machlokas of a dispute that was in the name of heaven, zo machlokas hilal v'shamayim. This is the disagreement between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. V'she'eino l'shem shamayim, zo machlokas Korach va'adaso. This is the disagreement between Korach and his community. That Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they're debating for the sake of heaven. They want the Jewish people to be able to observe halacha correctly. They have righteous intentions. Korach va'adaso, they just wanted to further their own personal benefit. This was not something that was for the sake of God. They didn't really care that the Jewish people had the holiest leader, the proper leader. They only cared about their own better situation. So that is not a machlokas that we say is one that is worthwhile, one that is going to be sustained. But Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they have the right intentions. That is going to be able to continue on. That is going to be one that is going to be sustained. The Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, in source number 5, gives us insight. But how did this play out practically with Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? It's all nice to say that They got along beautifully. But we do rule practically with Beis Hillel. So how does that manifest itself? How does that, what does that look like? Can we understand that? Aval pi sha'alu asurim she'ilu asurim ve'ilu matirin. Ilu pesulin ve'ilu machshirin. Lo nimne'u Beis Shammai milisha nashim mi Beis Hillel, ve'lo Beis Hillel mi Beis Shammai. Even though, on practical matters, Beit Hillel ruled that certain things were allowed and certain things were not allowed. Certain things were kosher and certain things were not kosher. The men from Beis Hillel did not abstain from marrying the women from Beis Shammai. And the men from Beis Shammai did not abstain from marrying the women from Beis Hillel. They were able to live together. Kol hataharos vahatmeyos shehayu alu matirim ve'ilu matmeyin lo nimne'u osin taharos ilu al gabei ilu. Rather, they were each able to hold their own mahalach, their own approach, and they were able to even marry within each other. Then they were able to create the closest of bonds between the two schools of thought, even though they had these fundamental disagreements. That when it came down to it, they were able to say, the halacha goes like Beis Hillel. We're able to rule this way in order for there to be peace between us. However, if we look in source number 6, it wasn't all good and well. And there's this entire piece from the Gemara that explains to us how they would practically rule on halachos. But I want to focus on the last line. If you go to, actually, the second to last line. Sorry, the last line. Misha Rabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel Shelo Shamshu Kol Tzarchan. They talked about this whole protocol for how they decided the halacha, that one would come and testify one way and one would testify another way, and they would rule between the two. And this all worked well when we were talking about Hillel and Shammai, the heads of the two camps that really knew what they were talking about. However, Misha Ravu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel, when the students of Hillel and Shammai multiplied tremendously, when their schools of thought grew, And it importantly notes that Shaloshem Shu Kol Tzarchan, not all of them knew as much as they needed to. They had not learned as much as they really should have yet. Rabu Machlokas BeYisrael. That's when there was a proliferation in the dispute within Am Yisrael. V'Asit Torah Kishtei Torah, and they made the Torah like it was two separate Torahs. And I think that this is something important to note. That we're starting off and we're talking about two gedolim. We're talking about Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that these are run by two of the greatest scholars of the generation. But when their Talmidim multiplied, and perhaps they didn't learn as much as they should have, they didn't really understand the issues in the way that they should have, that's when real machlokas brought out. That it didn't appear as a disagreement any longer. Now it was a dispute. And when there was dispute between them, then they ended up with two Torot. That before we were able to have Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, we had two different mahalchim, two different ways of thought that could work together. But once they lacked the sufficient education on the issues, that's when we really divided the Torah. When we felt like there was division, there was animosity one side towards the other, that's when there was real dispute. And I think that this is something that we can understand today. That we think back to the Gedolim of the previous generation and how Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik, besides for being related to one another, they were able to be close friends. When I was speaking through this shiur today with Rabbi Brand, he talked of Rabbi Levin. That Rabbi Levin, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, had a very different approach in his Yiddishkeit to the way that the YU Kollel perhaps views our hashkafa on the world. But did he think that we were terribly wrong? No. There was an understanding that different types of Jews are able to live differently. That the real Gedolim had the ability to understand the issues deeply, view that they were going to live their life and they were going to teach their Talmidim in a certain way. They weren't going to teach them the way of another Hashkafa. but they were able to understand that Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim, that both ways are a proper way of serving Hashem. There didn't need to be this bashing of another type of Jew. There didn't need to be this animosity between one type and another, because there was a real understanding of what we were dealing with. But now, perhaps, when we're in a state where we don't necessarily have the leaders, thank God we do have many strong leaders, but we don't have always the ability to understand the issues as fully, that's, I believe, when we feel like today, when the different groups are so separate from one another. So are we really, as we started with in the beginning, are we able to just say, everything's great? Whatever this type of Jew does is beautiful. Whatever this type of Jew does is beautiful. Everything's beautiful. And we're all come together. All is good and well. But we also don't see that in our Makoros. We don't see that in our sources. Because we have the idea of tochacha, of rebuke. What is the mitzvah of tochacha? In source number 7, if we see the pasuk in Sefer Vayikra from Parshas Kedoshim, Lo tisna zachicha bilvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. Hocheach tochiach es amisecha, you should rebuke your brother, v'lo tisa alav chi, so that you will not incur upon yourself a sin. This pasuk is teaching us the mitzvah of tochacha, that if you see a fellow Jew doing something that is improper, you have a positive commandment to rebuke them. You are not able to stand idly by and say, I do what I do, they do what they do. Beautiful. You are required to say something to them. This is supported by statements in Mishlei in source number 8. Someone who is able to reprove, blessings of good things will light upon them. So one who gives tochacha, it will be positive for them. And by a statement later on in Mishlei in source number 9, Mochiach adam acharichin yimsa mimachalik lashon. One who reproves a person will in the end find more favor than one who splits the tongue. That we often think that if we never tell someone else off, we will be in better standing. But what Mishlei is telling us is that good things will come to someone who cares enough about another person to rebuke them. And in source number 10 in Masechah Shabbos, Kol mi she'afshar limchut la'anshei beito v'lo micha, nitpas al anshei beito v'anshei iro, nitpas al anshei iro b'chol ha'ulam kulo, nitpas al kol ha'ulam kulo. Anyone who had the capability to effectively protest the sinful conduct of the members of their household and does not protest is held liable for the sins of the members of his household and is punished accordingly. If one is in a position to protest the sinful conduct of the people in one's town and fails to do so, one is apprehended for the sins of the people of his town. And the Gemara goes as far as to tell us, if you are in a position to protest the sinful conduct of the whole world and you fail to do so, you are apprehended for the sins of the whole world. That we have a responsibility as a Jew to our fellow Jew to apprehend wrong behavior. That if you see someone doing something incorrect, you are not able to stand by and say, live and let live. They're doing what they want to do and I'm doing what I want to do and it's all great. We are not allowed to do that. So how do we understand this? We're supposed to go around telling every other type of Jew, you're not doing the right thing, and you're not doing the right thing, and you're not doing the right thing. But what happened to Elu ve'elu? So we begin to understand, I believe, and this will bring us to our real question. Through the Rashbam and the Chizkuni, in source number 11 and source number 12, they give explanations to the mitzvah of tochacha within the broader context of the pasuk. This is done often in Parshas Kedoshim, because in Parshas Kedoshim, we have lists and lists and lists of mitzvos, and they seem to be somewhat random, but what the Mefarshim try to do is they try to take the mitzvos that are given over within the same pasuk, within the same group of psukim, within the same parak, they give them context and how they relate to one another. So in source number 11, Lo tisna tachicha v'vavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. Im gamalacha ra'a, lo titra'el lefanav ke'ohiv. If he has done wrong to you, do not act towards him as someone you love. Ubekarvo yasim aravo lo tov, because this is not going to bring good to him. What does this mean? Al tis'ehu belavecha ela hocheach tochiach al masha asa. If you have someone who wronged you, and you care about them, you don't want to harbor this hatred towards them, what do you need to do? And he says, this brings us to the next portion of the pasuk, which is, hocheach tochiach es amisecha. Tell them what it is that they did wrong. V'mitoch kach yihyeh shalom. And through this, there will be peace. V'lo tisa alav chi bilvavecha. And then you will not harbor this hatred in your heart, which would be a sin on you. Imagine the situation. You're driving down the street, and someone cuts you off. You're upset for a minute, and then you move on. Why do you move on? Because you don't really care about the person. You're probably never going to see them again. You don't have anything to do with them. So you're upset in the moment, and then that upset dissipates. That feeling goes away. Because they're not really important to you. You don't really care. What happens when your closest friend says something that really hurts you, really offends you? That feeling won't dissipate so quickly. Because every time you see them now, every time you speak to them, you're going to think, but they said that to me and that really hurt me. That really hit me at my core. And they're my friends. I care about our relationship. So what do you have to do? You can't just let that feeling sit. Rather, you need to talk to them. You need to approach them. You need to discuss what it was that you feel they said that was wrong. What hurt you? And then you will no longer harbor that feeling in your heart. So if with someone you love, you don't tell them off, of course, in a loving way, in a caring way, in a respectful way, you're going to harbor that negativity with you. You're going to carry it with you, and that's not okay. That's why Hashem says, "V'lo tisa alav chi." You're ultimately going to be the one to sin, because you are going to hold hatred for your brother in your heart, and that in and of itself is a sin. The Chizkuni adds as well, "Lo tisnas achicha b'vavecha im shamata sheha'ava lecha v'lo tiyeh notar lo sina b'vavecha misutera." If he does something wrong to you and you hold this hatred in your heart, you don't tell him off, you don't let it out into the air, you are going to be harboring this secret hatred within your heart. Ela hocheach tochiach oto, rather rebuke him. Madua asita kach, why did you do this to me? V'shema mitoch kach yitbarer hadavar ki hakol shekev v'lo nitkaven lama sha'ata savor. Perhaps he will come to understand your way of thinking, how you felt when he said that to you, how you felt when he did that. O yitakin et ma sha'ava umitoch kach lo tisa alav chi. Or he will correct what it was that he said. He will say, you know, I really was wrong. Perhaps it will be more clear on your end. Perhaps he will be able to clarify on his end. And then there will be peace between you rather than carrying around this deep-seated resentment. So the mitzvah of tochacha is one that at first glance is telling us that we need to rebuke our fellow Jew, that there are things that are unacceptable. But when we look deeper at the mitzvah, we see that this is not just about yelling, you're wrong, I'm right, and you're wrong. Rather, there's something that's much deeper here that I think perhaps brings us to a possible solution to the issue that we've developed today. And that is that it seems like the tochacha is meant to come from a place of care and concern. This is not meant to be a discussion between two individuals that are completely foreign to each other. Nobody is telling you that it is a smart idea that when someone cuts you off on the road, to pull over and start yelling at them. It's not going to get you anywhere productive, and it's not necessary. They're going to drive away, and you're going to drive away, and you're probably never going to see each other again. When it comes to individuals who are meant to come together, we're not allowed to let that grievance go unaired. We have to allow for a situation of peacemaking. We have to allow each side to express what they feel is wrong with the other in hopes that they can clarify and make peace on both sides, that each side can give a little bit, can explain their perspective, and come to a place of love rather than hatred. But the question that still remains, and I don't think we're going to answer today, because I think it's much more complex than we can develop in the next 10 minutes, is, what about today? We understand, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that there are different approaches. But we also say that there are certain things that are wrong. Hochiach tochiach es amisacha, you should rebuke your fellow Jew. So how do we decide what falls into Elu ve'elu and what falls into Hochiach tochiach? What is something that we should say? There's a multiplicity of understandings. There's a certain pluralism in our thought. They're right and we're right. And where do we say that this is something that we need to rebuke someone for? What is that line? How do you know whether something is a valid derech within Dvar Hashem or someone is wrong? Something that I have not been able to yet come to peace with within my mind is groups of individuals that came out against people who went to the rally in Washington. I have not been able to make peace with it in my mind. I just haven't. When we believe that this was a rally for pikuach nefesh, is there elu ve'elu and pikuach nefesh? Nobody says that when a Hatzalah guy gets to a call, he should stand there and say, oh, actually, I have a different mahalach in this issue. Pikuach nefesh is not docha Shabbos. It's not. So I'm going to go home. I just came to tell you. Nobody would say that when it was that clear in front of you that this is a matter of pikuach nefesh, saving a human life, that there's elu ve'elu. So when one side sees something as pikuach nefesh, you see that we are going to show the individuals who hold some of the most human power in this world what needs to be done to save Jewish lives. How am I able to live with the fact that other Jews won't show up? They weren't able to be there. That's something I've been struggling with. There doesn't seem to be elu ve'elu here. To me, it seems pretty clear that there's an instance of hochayach tochiach here. But it happened. So what do we do now? And now everyone keeps telling us, and I'm sure we will hear 100 times today, that the key to achieving the ge'ula is achdus, is coming together, is being able to put aside our differences and come together as one. So how do I move on from this? I can't give tochacha to hundreds of thousands of Jews. I'm supposed to go to each gadol and air my grievances? How am I supposed to go on from this? How are we supposed to proceed as a Jewish people? And again, I don't have all the answers. I'm just me, Emma Katz, talking on a Sunday morning in Chicago. I'm not saying that I am going to solve all of the problems of the Jewish people. But because this is something that I was personally really struggling with, I found a few ideas that helped me to feel better about the situation and feel that we can move forward towards achdus within this framework of elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, and keeping in mind that we do have the idea of tochacha. So the first idea that I saw was a source from the Ha'im Ekdavar and the Netziv in source number 13. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, asher hoteiti eschem eretz Mitzrayim, ani Hashem Elokeichem. Lefi she'in hiluch avodas Hashem b'tmidut shel kol b'nei amecha shavin. That there is not one way in avodas Hashem. Ze osek b'Torah, one learns Torah, v'amla kol hayom, and toils in Torah the entire day. V'ze poresh atzmo la'avoda, and others will go out to work. V'ze l'gmilos chasadim, and this one will go out and do chasad. V'hakol l'shem shamayim. He says, we live in a world where there are different types of Jewish people. There are Jews who learn all day. There are Jews who work. There are Jews who do more chesed. And the uniting factor between all of them is hakol l'shem shamayim. All of them are doing it for the sake of heaven. V'gam b'Torah atzma, even within the Torah itself. In kol derech limud shaveh. Not every way of learning is equal. V'zeh b'ma'aseh ha-mitzvos. One focuses on the practicalities of performing the mitzvos. V'po kol kitzvei avosecha b'ma'izah hiratafeh. And others will talk to you about everything that comes before it, sort of the more in-depth learning. V'haya mar zahir b'mitzvot Shabbos, and some are more careful in the mitzvot of Shabbos. V'mar b'mitzvot tzitzis. And he goes on and on, and he explains that there are so many different paths. And what we're not trying to do as a Jewish people is discover which one is correct. Because he says that is the definition of elu v'elu. Some focus more on this area and others focus more on this area. Are we meant to look down on the people that focus on a different area that we do? No. What we're meant to do the internal work to recognize is that we are each completing this tapestry of the Jewish people. That I couldn't focus on everything as one individual that the entire Jewish people is able to come together to focus on. We need every type of person. We need every individual that has their specific focus and their specific strength. Someone who really exemplified this idea was Rav Kook. Rav Kook was known as someone who loved every single Jew. And there are some very, very extreme stories. There was one instance in which, on his way home from a bris milah in the Old City, a group of very zealous Jews came and poured sewage water all over Rav Kook because they so strongly disagreed with his ideology. Later in the day, the Attorney General of the British Mandate came to visit Rav Kook to express his anger over what happened and ask the Rav to pursue legal action against these Jews. And Rav Kook replied, "I have no interest in legal actions. I love them despite what they did. I love them so much that I am even prepared to embrace and kiss them. My entire being burns with love for every single Jew." When it came to loving every Jew, Rav Kook was number one. He was able to love every individual. But did this mean that Rav Kook had no thoughts, no ideology? Definitely not. We know that Rav Kook was the founder of what we think of as so much of religious Zionism. He had his thoughts. He had his ideologies. And he was one who was willing to speak out on those instances. While Rav Kook's love for the Jewish people knew no bounds, one should not think that he was some sort of liberal who accepted every view that was presented within Judaism. On the contrary, he harshly condemned desecrations of the Torah, and he did all he could to inspire transgressors to mend their ways. For instance, he writes, "Whoever undermines through the proliferation of ideas, all the more so through deed, the holy idea that vitalizes the Israelite nation is a traitor to the nation, and to pardon him is folly." Rav Kook believed that if you were going to be against him as an individual, fine, gesundheit, don't like me, I will still love you. I will still love my fellow Jew. But if you are going to desecrate the Torah, that's when I'm going to step up and I am going to be mochiach. I am going to stand up against you and I am going to rebuke you. And I think that this is the distinction that we need to focus in on. Elu ve'elu is within Divrei Torah. It's when all the ideas are supporting and promoting Torah. That's something that we have to come to love. Individuals, we have to love. Our fellow Jew, it doesn't matter what their ideology is. We have to love our fellow Jew. It's when someone comes to desecrate the Torah, that's when we have to be mochiach. But I want to, and one quote from Rav Kook in source number 14, "It's proper to hate a corrupt person only for his defects, but insofar as he is endowed with a divine image, it is necessary to love him." There Rav Kook says, individuals we must love. And I think that this is the point that we have to pick up on. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. There are different ways of avodas Hashem. But in the end of the day, we are all part of one nation. We are all brothers. And I think that both the ideas of elu ve'elu and tochiach tochiach come from this point. As we said, a random person, you don't care what they're doing. They can do whatever they want. You might roll your eyes. You might not love it. But in the end of the day, if you don't care about a person, you're not going to help them to change. You're not going to help them to improve. You're not going to express your grievances in hopes of a better relationship. It's only when we feel that we are connected to one another, that's when we feel like we have to engage in this dialogue. A friend of mine, when we lived in Israel, there was a very like windy road down to the building that we lived in. And there was like a very, very narrow sidewalk. But if you were walking with a stroller, it was almost impossible to stay on the sidewalk. So you had to walk in the street and deal with the cars honking at you if they weren't paying attention when they came down the road. So one day, my friend was walking as close as she could to the side, and this car pulls over and starts honking at her and rolls down the window and starts yelling at her. "Why aren't you on the sidewalk? Get on the sidewalk. What are you doing?" She's like, I'm sorry. I'll get on the sidewalk." And he yells out before he pulls off, "I'm only saying it because I love you." She's like, "Who in the world is this person?" This is the most Israel moment ever.
Only in Israel
does the guy pull over to yell at you and tell you how much he loves you, and that's why he yelled at you. But there was something so deep in this that only because he viewed her as a sister does he bother to tell her to stay safe. We are brothers. We're not just a group of ragtag individuals trying to make peace. We all come from one core. We're all one family. And that's why if we focus on each other as individuals, not as ideologies, that's when I think that we are able to come together. That when we're able to say that I might disagree with you, but I disagree with you because you're my brother, within that ideology, we can reach true achdus. We can really come together when we focus on each other as who we are, as each other's family. That doesn't mean we're always going to think alike. That doesn't mean we've solved all the issues and we think everyone's actions are perfect. But that's the starting point from which we can even say, I care to make the relationship better. I care to give that tochacha, to make it that we can come closer to one another. Just to end off with two other very short ideas. I know we're 1 minute over. Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who is one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University and is also this year's visiting Rosh Beis Medrash in the YU Kollel in Chicago. He's come for visits. He comes in virtually to give shiurim to the Kollel guys. He wrote, I think it was in this past week's Jewish Link, a letter to my son. And within this letter, he's writing to his son who is off to learn in Eretz Yisrael. He states, "Never let anyone, in the name of Torah, make sweeping generalizations about whole groups of people without knowledge of the reality of their individual natures. When the Chafetz Chaim wrote his Sefer, some of the Dayanim from Vilna wrote Haskama, in which they noted that despite the fact that Torah is supposed to be an antidote to Lashon Hara, somehow there are still Talmidei Chachamim who make unfair judgments about people and groups. That does not make it acceptable. If anything, increases the damage. Sometimes people try to make distinctions between Jews based on Torah. Like we said in the beginning, they were this type of kippah and they were this type of kippah. They're not doing it right." But he says this just makes it worse, to use Torah as the thing that comes between us. "Unfortunately, it is possible for even minor differences in philosophy to create divisions between Jews, and then for these splits to justify the disparagement or dismissal of major portions of the Jewish people, even in the minds of those who seem to be tzaddikim. The Nitziv, in his introduction to Bereishis, wrote that Hashem has no patience for such tzaddikim, and that this is the cause for the exile. That we must always remember that we are individuals, all from the same group. We're all working for the same goal. It might seem so outrageous that another Jew could have acted in a certain way. But to remember that before we get to the philosophy, we must remember that we are brothers and approach it in that manner." And finally, to end off with one idea from Rav Itchermeyer Morgenstern, who is a big Kabbalist in Yerushalayim. Source number 16. Ki kol achan mi Yisrael hu chilek elokam mima'al. V'kol b'nei Yisrael him achdas elokus. Ve'iser gamor hu lehisakel al chitonios ha'adam. He says we must remember that each and every Jewish person is a chelek eloka mima'al. We each have a piece of the divinity within us. We are each part of Hashem. Ve'iser gamor hu lehisakel al chitonios shel ha'adam. It is completely not allowed to focus only on the externalities of a Jew. Ki kol echad miYisrael yakar me'od be'enei Hashem. Because every Jew is dear in the eyes of Hashem. Ka'avanim tovot v'margaliot, like shining beautiful stones. Afilu shenidme b'chitoniyos yesh mi shemitza'er oto. Even though it may seem from the external that this Jew might cause pain, chas v'shalom to Hashem. Hu chela kenegdo, v'yesh gam shemarbe l'tza'aro be'ofen nora, al kol zeh muchrach l'yistakel alav v'chinat panimiyos. Even if a Jew seems so far away, we must look at his internality. We must look at him as a chelek eloka mima'al. And with this, I want to end off. That, as I said, I've not solved all the issues. I'm still upset. I still feel like not every part of the Jewish people is acting in the way I would hope they would. But something that this helped me to reframe, and I hope that we can all look at differently, is to recognize that we believe in pluralism within Torah thought, that there is a multiplicity in our ideologies, that we were able to think differently. There's also room to rebuke. There's room to believe that someone's not doing the right thing. But it all has to come from that place of love. It has to come from a place of recognizing that this person is a chelek eloka mima'al and is my brother. So in the words of that random Israeli driver, I'm only doing it because I love you. When we debate with one another, when we disagree with one another, it must always come from a place of believing at our core that we are united as one. And Amir Tashem, when we approach in this way, we will truly be able to come together as one, to be that united whole that will, Amir Tashem, bring the final Ge'ulah.